Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
The holiday break may be coming up for college students, but many of them, along with their parents, will not be taking a break from the avalanche of paperwork required for financial aid and entrance applications. Welcome to Virginia Conversations. I'm A. Lily Lee. Thanks for joining us. Today, we're going to try to help students and parents navigate that college paperwork. Virginia has 23 community colleges, 16 public colleges, and 33 independent colleges. And this week in particular, Virginia College Application Week, education officials want to see every high school senior applying to at least one of them. Here's more from Connie Stevens.
Virginia College Application Week is a pilot program operating in 16 schools across the state this week, offering support through the application process. Paula Fisher is with the State Council of Higher Education.
Students are receiving hands-on support from teachers. We have counselors and support systems coming from the universities, coming out to the actual schools to help students apply. We have volunteers in the communities also supporting the schools. In addition to that, CHEV has provided materials, checklists to help students understand the process, USB drives so they can download their materials and their applications and maintain them and keep them in an organized manner. And also fee waivers. Many of the universities are offering application fee waivers, so they don't have to worry about that financial barrier.
Fisher says the schools in the pilot program were identified by the Gear Up program as schools with higher percentages of students in the free or reduced lunch program, those with the greatest needs and barriers to higher education.
But we do hope that we have changed the minds of some, and they are actually considering college when they may not have in the past and realize that the resources are available to them.
And Virginia College Application Week supports the goals of the state's Top Jobs program, an effort to award an additional 100,000 undergraduate degrees to Virginians within the next 15 years. Robert Lambeth with the Council of Independent Colleges in Virginia calls the effort a model of cooperation with all sectors of education on the ground to assist students in getting that college application submitted.
Which can be a little bit daunting if the student comes from a first-generation college family. So it is a good experience to fill out the forms and do the necessary steps. By the higher education community going into the high school, it makes it much easier. Obviously, you don't go to college unless you apply, and so we hope all the students will apply at several schools, and we think this will increase the ultimate college-going rate.
Officials hope next year to expand the program to more schools throughout Virginia, even perhaps for a longer period of time. I'm Connie Stevens reporting.
To help with those college applications and the maze of student aid available, we welcome Tom Kramer, Executive Director of Virginia 21, an advocacy group for young people, and Barry Simmons, Director of Financial Aid at Virginia Tech. We want to thank them both. Barry, welcome. I want to start with you. This idea of trying to get admitted, you know, the admissions process is one thing, but I think a lot of people forget that right in tandem with that, they must be thinking about financial aid. It's imperative.
Absolutely. In order to make both processes, the admissions process as well as the financial aid process, run smoothly for the students, they need to develop a checklist for each institution in which they're interested, both for admissions things to do and when to do them, as well as financial aid. Admissions needs to be taking place now, as exhibited during this week of applications, and then financial aid will begin after January 1, but they need to make a list of each thing for each institution of things they need to do.
Now, Tom Kramer, I know that you and your organization have made it a mission. You advocate to increase the number of college graduates, and you do that in different ways. But this is a big piece of it right here.
This is a huge piece of it, Maylily, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here. You know, Virginia 21, you know, we are an organization that educates young people about some of the biggest challenges of their future, and we try to show them how to impact the political process and the public policy process to actually, you know, make a difference in their lives. And the way we talk about, you know, college access is that young people face two main challenges. It's paying for college and finding a job, and you know, this whole process sits at the crux of the whole thing. You know, when you look at the percentage of you know, first-generation college graduates, and you know, particularly in the Hispanic community, you know, right now, you know, 5% of our high schools graduate are Hispanics, and by 2020, that's going to be 17%. And, you know, access to quality financial aid, access to information about the process, access to, you know, information about the college life and different colleges, that's increasingly important as we go forward.
I want to read a quote from Governor Bob McDonnell in launching this initiative. He said, quote, "We must make sure that we have the highly educated workforce needed to fill the top jobs in the Commonwealth." So that went along with the launch of this project, and the initiative announced helps to support the goals of the top jobs legislation, which includes awarding 100,000 additional undergraduate degrees for Virginians over the next 15 years. Now, Barry, you've worked with Virginia Tech, and you actually have a 40-year career in financial aid, which is phenomenal. So this year, there's a brand new project. With 40 years of experience behind you, what is your thought around this new initiative?
I think it's absolutely great. We applaud it from a state as well as a national perspective. The more people know about the college-going process, the benefits of a post-high school education, and let me just make one clarification. When we say college in this conversation this morning, I'm talking about pursuit of educational objectives past the high school level. That can be community college. It can be a traditional institution. So it's absolutely imperative that citizens of the Commonwealth continue their education beyond high school with some additional credential, be it a certificate, a vocational certificate, an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree, or whatever, for the future of the Commonwealth as well as the nation. College going has been somewhat of a mystery in many instances, and as the population has grown, we've attempted to get more information out. The process is somewhat complex, both on the admission side and the financial aid side, but we made great strides over the years in getting the word out to various different populations. Tom speaks of the growing Hispanic population. And there are certain things that we have to do in terms of financial aid and admissions both to address that population given their cultural values, one of which is an aversion to debt. Tom, you and I were on a program back earlier in the fall where we talked about student debt. And yes, student debt is a problem, but nevertheless, that is a reality in financing higher education, and we have to convince people that it is a very good and wise investment in the future.
The number to call is 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397. If you are a listener and you have your own story to share, we'd love to hear it, whether you are in the process of looking at colleges or whether you're a parent helping a young one launch into the world. We would like to hear your anecdotes. And you have at your disposal Barry Simmons, who can speak from the Virginia Tech perspective and 40 years of financial aid expertise, and also Tom Kramer, an advocate for students who's working with Virginia 21 and doing some wonderful work there. Now, one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is how big financial aid is. When you think of, for instance, Barry, the Virginia Tech staff, the first thing that comes to mind for me, oh, their financial aid department, well, that's probably you and maybe a part-timer. Give us a better illustration of how big your department is.
We have approximately 28 full-time staff members in university scholarships and financial aid at Virginia Tech. And this past year for fiscal 12, we in some way, shape, form, or another administered around $410
million. $410 million.
Right.
How much of that is money that Virginia Tech parted with versus aid in getting grants and funding from elsewhere?
When you break it down into, and that's one of the things I want to do, this is grants and scholarships, employment opportunities, student work, as well as student loans. And it roughly runs out to about a third of that. A third or a little bit more of that is Virginia Tech money, and the rest of it is either state, federal, or private funds.
So folks who are interested in financial aid can come to you, and you'll actually help with counseling. You're not just the one-stop shopping. You will help with the multiple avenues for federal aid.
We deal in giving students and their families options for financing higher education, and there are many different options out there, not just with financial aid, but the way they can plan their own finances. Another thing that they, for those of you who have young children in the audience today, you'll be wanting to be looking into Virginia 529 plans, the prepaid tuition plan. Those are excellent. They take a little while to plan for and build up, But there are so many different options out there. If people will just ask about them, we'll help as we can. There's a lot of information on the website. There are a lot of financial aid websites out there that people can look to that that will be of assistance to them. But one of the things is they do need to have some responsibility for doing some of the research on this. And then once you get a basic knowledge in there, we'll be more than happy to further explain the options that, you've become familiar with.
Let's pull up a little bit of information from the Virginia 529 website. So that's Virginia529.com. Here's how they put it. Virginia 529 College Savings Plan is your resource for Virginia's tax advantage college savings programs. You've heard of this before. You put a little bit of money in. It's a cumulative program, and at the end of it, you can get some serious help with either taking care of tuition for an in-state school or heavily offsetting the costs.
Yes, and these programs of the Virginia 529 program is portable. You can carry it out of state. It's good in either the prepaid plan or the Virginia Education Savings Trust plan for both public and private institutions. For public institutions, depending on the plan that one purchases, they can lock in various portions of the tuition as guaranteed, or they can convert it later on into the VEST program, which will go into other expenses than tuition, because one of the myths of going to college and one of the flaws that people make in decision-making when over what institution to attend is that there are more expenses to college than just tuition and fees. Room and board, whether you're on campus or off campus, of course, there's books and supplies. Students have to have clothing, toiletries, et cetera, and so on. Transportation, whether you're on campus or off campus. As well as at Virginia Tech and many other institutions, we require computers. So all of that adds into the cost of an education beyond just the bill that you'll see for tuition.
A lot of people have referred to this in different ways. We're going to call it the Virginia 529 plan. Tom Kramer, what has been your experience with students and parents involved in this particular flexible program?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Maylee. You know, one of the things that we shouldn't forget to mention when we talk about financial aid and how to prepare for cost, you know, one of the things that the governor also says all the time, and we've worked very closely with his administration, he's been a big ally of ours in this quality and access fight. You know, he always says that to get a good job, you need a good education. Now, when you go into the financial aid process, you know, families really need to have honest conversations with their sons and daughters about, you know, how much is it going to cost? You know, how much are folks going to borrow? I mean, listen to this. You know, just this past year, the 2010-2011 year, you know, students borrowed over $735 million to pay for college. You know, that's an average of about $22,000 per graduating senior. That's a lot of money. You know, when you look at it, some students are borrowing a whole lot more than that. And it's really important to make sure when you're going through this process that you sort of do a cost-benefit analysis and say, you know, what do you expect to study? You know, what kind of job do you think you're gonna be interested in on the other end of it? So that you can make a good judgment about, one, you know, the pathway through college, whether or not community college is the best bet, because you can go to community college and then transfer to a four-year school and save a ton of money, or whether it's, you know, to go to the four-year school and make sure you're on a track that's going to, you know, make you competitive enough on the marketplace to be able to pay back the loans and whatever you couldn't get with financial aid grant money.
We have a call from Jill from Roanoke. Go ahead with your call or comment.
Hi, I've got a student who is a freshman at Virginia Tech, and she was a minority at her school, and her stepdad and I both work full-time for local government agencies, and we didn't qualify for any financial aid whatsoever. So by the time she gets out of school, she'll be about 2042, about $80,000 in debt. And we're really frustrated with the system. And I was just wondering maybe if there's some way we can overcome this.
Well, one of the things you may want to sit down and talk with some of the staff at the university about that. I assume you did fill out the free application for federal student aid, and of course we have to work by federal and state standards over who qualifies for what type of financial aid. Now, again, not to press loans too much, but anyone, generally speaking, can qualify. Any student can qualify for an educational loan. Borrowing that amount of money that you indicated, And the at the end of 4 years, the amount of debt that she would accumulate is much above the average. So there needs there's something askew there someplace. Again, the family is expected to contribute towards a student's education, even step-parents. That's one of the things both federal and state aid require, that if there's a step-parent involved, even if there is something like a prenuptial, saying that the natural parent will fully foot the cost of a higher education, the step-parent is also held somewhat responsible, too, when looking at financial aid eligibility.
And let me understand what you're saying, Barry. There shouldn't be anybody who doesn't get a loan of some kind. Is that correct?
For all intents and purposes, that's correct.
Okay. I'm often wondering in navigating systems whether people stop the minute they meet the first resistance. It seems like some form of follow-up is necessary.
That's correct. One of the things that happens, and let me just talk about the financial aid process here for a moment. Obviously, of course, you want to apply for admission to the institution. Don't wait to hear an admissions decision before you apply for financial aid. That application process begins with the free application for federal student aid, which becomes available January the 1st of each year. One of the things that happens is that after you fill out the FAFSA, the free application for federal student aid, regardless of the institution that you're attending, the federal government may choose you for audit, in which cases you need to make sure that you filed your income taxes, your federal income taxes, and that's accessible to the FAFSA. And I can talk a little bit more about that later on. But many people, when they get the notice that they're being audited, or verified is the term for it, they stop there. The Institute for College Success, an organization out in California, did a study of California community colleges a couple of years ago, and found that many students just flat out stopped the aid process when they were selected for verification. It did not continue. So that is a roadblock. We're not reporting you to the IRS or anything. It's just that we want to make sure that there is accurate information on the FAFSA for us to use to determine your financial aid information. So that's one of the things that does stop people, is the verification process.
Are you seeing the same thing, Tom, when you're doing your work through Virginia 21?
You know, we are. In fact, you know, it's not so much that students stop the process for us. It's that students actually, when they look at how much money they're borrowing, if you go back to the caller with, you know, their daughter's going to have $80,000 of debt, you know, they actually know they're borrowing. They know why they're borrowing. They know why they're taking the risk. But they actually they don't know what their payment is going to be, you know, on the other end of that. And you know, one thing I would love to know from Barry, you know, what happens at Virginia Tech that actually communicates more with students about sort of financial literacy in these areas?
That's a perfect question. We'll pick up on that after our break. You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. We'll have more on student financial aid in a moment with Tom Cramer and Barry Simmons. But first, next week, Senator-elect Tim Kaine joins us on the next Virginia Conversations. So stay with us. We're back in a minute. You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Today we're discussing student financial aid and college applications. Our guests today are Tom Cramer, Executive Director of Virginia 21, and Barry Simmons, Director of Financial Aid at Virginia Tech. We got a call earlier from Jill in Roanoke who talked about $80,000 in debt. That's a lot of money. And we discussed with Barry the fact that at some level of debt or borrowing, there shouldn't be any student who misses out on some form of financial aid.
That's correct. And that, of course, includes loans. And then Tom wanted to know about what institutions are doing, Virginia Tech in specific, but I think the question is applicable to all post-high school institutions. What are they doing to let students know or be better informed, be more literate about the financial decisions that they're making? And for the federal loan programs, There is required what we call entrance counseling that students must go through before their loans can be dispersed. And this goes through and discusses the fact that it is a loan, that it does accumulate, that they're, you know, depending on the type of loan they have, it has interest, it doesn't have interest, the various repayment plans that are available to them. At Virginia Tech, we do have a financial literacy program. And in addition to that, we just worked with the U.S. Department of Education this past February in piloting a new financial literacy website that went live back in July, where students can go in and essentially look at the potential earnings that they may have with their degree, the potential borrowing that they may do over the 4 years, and then their potential loan repayments. And that website is www.studentloans, that's one word, studentloans.gov. There are various resources there for students and their loans. One of the more troubling pieces that we're finding with student loans these days, where some of this $80,000 may be coming from, is we talked about some of the barriers to financial aid, and certainly the fact that I mentioned when verification may stop a student. A lot of folks and parents don't want to take the time to fill out the FAFSA for a variety of reasons. They're, of course, on the FAFSA. They're displaying their very personal financial information, and some people don't feel like sharing that.
And FAFSA stands for Free Application for Federal Student Aid.
Right, Free Application for Federal Student Aid. You should never have to pay for doing one. There are some websites out there that will charge you for it. But at any rate, they shouldn't have to pay, nor should they... they should always start by doing the FAFSA. There's a lot of direct marketing by some educational lending companies, including some rather large banks and lending organizations that do a lot of direct mail or now direct web, touting their own educational loans that they're a lot less trouble to get than the federal loans because you don't have to fill out the FAFSA, this, that, and the other. So that is where we're finding, not just in Virginia, but nationwide, we're finding a great deal of the student debt growing from these private loans where people have not really pursued the regular financial aid process to the extent that they should.
Brandon from North Garden out in Albemarle County, what is your question or comment?
Yes, I appreciate it very much. And I have a 2-year-old and a 6-month-old, and you know, definitely thinking about saving for college and working on that as we speak. But I graduated from VMI in 2002, and at that time it was approximately $10,000 a year. And I was just, you know, cruising the websites here lately, and a VMI now is approximately $20,000 a year. And I think that is reflective to most universities and colleges around the state and probably the nation right now, doubling or coming close to doubling in their costs. And then and so many people are taking out loans to go to school. It kind of makes me think about the housing market, where the housing prices absolutely soared for so many years, and people continued to get loans and take loans until it just popped. And what do you all see, and you know, do we see the higher education correcting itself financially, or is it going to take something like the housing market to make people, you know, think differently about this?
I think, Barry, you want to take that?
Yeah, and then I want to kick it to Tom, too, if we can, May Lilly.
Sure, thank you.
One of the reasons, a major reason here in Virginia, as well as many other states, for public higher education, such as VMI, Tech, Longwood, Virginia State, the reason the tuition prices keep escalating there is because of decreased state support. And I think Tom can probably give us some good background on that.
Sure. Thank you, Barry. And this is an area where Virginia 21 has been very active over the last 2 or 3 years. In fact, you know, one of the biggest issues that we find with students and their families when we do this, you know, they come and they say, gosh, why am I borrowing so much? Why do the costs look like what they are? And when we've looked at this and we've done our research about the cost of higher education, you know, what we found is that the cost is actually not going up. What's actually going up is the share that students and their families pay, you know, for higher education. And just to give you some numbers on that, we looked at some data from George Mason University up in Northern Virginia. And when we did inflation-adjusted numbers, we found out that George Mason's cost over 10 years, the actual cost to educate a student, has only gone up 6%. But the share that the state has paid versus the share the family has paid has actually just dropped. And if you look at the cost, if you look at the lines with tuition line, the state funding line, you know, they basically just cross each other and they move in opposite directions. So you know, just to put numbers to that, about 10 years ago, the per student funding on average at Virginia's public universities at the 4-year schools, you know, it was about $10,500. Now when you look at it, it's closer to $5,500, and some schools even are looking at less. You know, so the big question here, you know, is that more students require higher education to get into the workforce, and you look at it, you know, by 2014, 65% of the jobs that are created are going to require some sort of college degree, and that's not just 4-year, that's 2-year, that's certificates, that's anything after high school. You know, higher education is obviously in demand, and people need it, but the share that the state has paid per student has never been lower. And, you know, we've been fortunate for the last 2 years to have partnered with the governor and the General Assembly. You know, like last year, we actually, you know, organized over 10,000 students to communicate. They sent 15,000 messages to the Virginia General Assembly, everyone's elected officials, to actually ask them to invest in our colleges, to keep tuition down. But not only that, we've asked them to do financial aid. You know, to put some numbers to one of the biggest barriers to financial aid is actually the resources that are available for it from the state. Right now, there's a $211 million shortfall in the amount of money that students need to pay for to pay for school from a financial aid standpoint. You know, by next year, that shortfall is looking to be $282 million. So, you know, what Virginia 21 is doing right now, we actually on Tuesday submitted a letter to the governor signed by all the student body presidents asking the governor to, you know, focus on quality and focus on financial aid. You know, make sure students have the money they need to pay for school. You know, one of the reasons that folks borrow so much is, you know, there's not enough available to help kids pay that need help.
I want to be sure to get your calls in. Don and Timothy, keep holding. We're interested in your questions. Robin, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Good, Virginia.
Hi there. Thanks for calling.
Yes, and thanks for having me on.
You have an interesting concept about being declared independent from your parents.
Yes, yeah. I graduated from Virginia Tech back in 92, and my parents suffered an embezzler in their family business, and the last 2 years, actually my sophomore year, I had started the process to become declared independent and was then declared my last 2 years. I was on that wonderful Virginia Tech 5-year program, and it significantly reduced a lot of the loans and increased the grants that I had available, and just didn't know if some of those situations had changed since 92 and you know, just kind of what was the procedure to go through to be declared independent from your parents.
First, let me understand, so that everybody understands, you do that so that their financial scenario does or does not affect your own financial scenario applying for financial aid. I think that's the key thing. Okay,
yeah,
Barry.
Yeah, that's correct. And one of the most difficult pieces in financial aid administration is determining and counseling parents and students as to what part the parents play in the financing of higher education. Federal and state law assumes that the parents will be involved in determining financial aid eligibility up until the student is age 24, married, veteran, and there are a couple of other instances there where the parents can be taken out. Robin, you were right on the cusp of some major changes in that in 92. Prior to 92, students could demonstrate financial self-sufficiency and be declared independent and no longer include their parents' income. But things such as embezzlement, severe reverses to a parent's financial situations could cause them to be declared independent. And schools can do this. This is a school-by-school, institution-by-institution determination for federal as well as state and institutional aid. Generally speaking, there must be something for independence in today's law where the student is being abused mentally or physically, or they're in imminent danger by maintaining contact with the parents. Parents' refusal to support the student is not a legitimate grounds for that, unless it's for some type of irreconcilable difference between the student and the parents. And those generally today are included include things such as students coming out as having an alternative lifestyle, and incarceration of parents and things like that. But students can be declared independent. A student cannot declare themselves independent.
Right.
They have to go through a process with institutions. The other thing, and what we're talking about is a term here that we refer to as professional judgment, where there are financial reverses in a student's family. That can be taken into account, through an appeals process at the institution. So generally speaking, if there was embezzlement and a family's assets and resources were exhausted through something like an embezzlement, that is something certainly that, as far as it could be supported by forensic accounting, that could be taken into account and not have to declare the student as independent.
Does that pretty much answer your question, Robin?
Yeah, I guess, so it sounds like the climate has changed and the rules of that declaration have been altered since 92. Would that be correct?
They've been stiffened since 92. That is correct.
Okay. I was just curious. I've got an 18-year-old entering college at some point here in the next year or two, and just wanted to make sure I was not, basing assumptions on previous information that was an error now.
Yeah, the one thing about financial aid rules and regulations is generally they change by the minute. So quite frankly, so a lot of them do change, and it is challenging to keep up with them. But the ease of becoming independent has increased in difficulty since 92.
Robin, quick question. Did the embezzler go to jail?
No, there was never a conviction on her case. My parents have had a very, very small business. And it just ended up really putting them into financial straits for about 5 to 7 years. Their financial situation was very tenuous and very difficult. And then they were able to kind of dig out of the hole that had been created.
It's unfortunate. Thanks for calling, Robin. We really appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Don from Pocosin.
Yes, my question has to do with the free federal aid that you apply for. In a situation where a family does not have that much money, where they would qualify, does having money in a 529 put them at a disadvantage, or is that included as part of their income when they are determined whether they are eligible or not?
We talked about the Virginia 529 plan earlier. For those who are just tuning in, it's basically a way in which parents can start now in saving for college. And what do you think, Tom? Do you want to take? Is that going to have a negative impact on financial aid eligibility later on?
Actually, I think Barry's better to answer this question. But
okay.
I don't think the 529 is counted against you when your son or daughter applies for financial aid.
Tom, right. You're on the right track there. If the 529 is owned by the parents or grandparents, it's sort of off record. However, if the 529 is transferred, is owned by the student, then it does count. But otherwise, essentially, it'll have minimal impact.
Great. Thank you so much, John.
Could I add something else?
Sure.
And that was my question, because the money is already in there, and, it had come to a point where you're concerned that you might have put your money in the wrong place. You may have put it in a savings account as opposed to the 529, so it wouldn't actually hurt you when you went for that extra aid.
No, it will not adversely impact you any more than a savings account, as long as it's not in the student's name.
All right. Thank you so much.
And can I add one other thing to that? I mean, this is, I know from talking to our young people and our members that a lot of parents actually don't save because they assume that their son or daughter is going to qualify for large amounts of aid. And I'll just say that's not the case, that families are expected to save to the extent they can to send their son or daughter to college. This is not just, we talk a lot about the state funding problems, but this is not just a state problem. I mean, families do need to save money to send their children to college.
That's Tom Kramer, Executive Director of Virginia 21. We don't want you to get lost in the numbers. Virginia 21 is an advocacy group for young people. The Virginia 529 plan is a savings plan for college. Hey, Timothy from Galax, you have an interesting question. Go with that.
Yes, ma'am. I guess it's kind of looking in a crystal ball, but I would like to ask your guest if there is a, I guess, reputable organization that can correlate careers to salaries 4 to 6 years down the road so that the corresponding information would be accurate enough for the student to plan if they have a general career in mind but not a specific career, and they could look at those numbers and say, hey, look, you know, if I could come out of school in this position, I could pay back my student loans rather than choose a career that down the road when they get out of school, there's no job opportunities. You know, in Southwest Virginia, we're kind of limited, and I just wondered if there was a, you know, an organization or perhaps either one of your guests that they did offer that service. And I know it's not an exact science because things can change dramatically in you know, in the 4 to 6 year period, but it would I would think it would help in choosing a career, a general direction of that career where the salary or the, you know, your wages would allow you to be able to repay that student loan.
Great. Thank you so much, Timothy. Bottom line, how do you find a career that would best pay back student loans? I like that one.
Yeah, and that's an excellent question. Chev, and I was looking for the website, and I can't find it right off. Perhaps before the end of the program, we can find it. But Chev, about a month and a half, 2 months ago, I put up a website of tracking graduates of Virginia institutions, their major, and their subsequent earnings from that. So that is a relatively new resource available to us here in the Commonwealth. The U.S. Department of Labor has a website where you can go and look at occupations and potential earnings there. And I believe you can also look at finaid.org, finaid.org, and they will have some information on that.
We have a couple of callers on hold. I know Pete, you're holding, and Samuel, you're holding. I hope that you will stay with us. Please hold on the line, and we'll take your questions after this break. You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. This reminder that past editions of Virginia Conversations can be heard at virginiapublicradio.org. We're talking about applying for colleges and financial aid, and we'll be back with Tom Kramer and Barry Simmons and untangle this complex maze. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Today we're talking about the looming deadlines for students hoping to land financial aid. Our guests today are Tom Kramer, Executive Director of Virginia 21, and Barry Simmons, Director of Financial Aid at Virginia Tech. And before I forget, Tom, I'm going to give everyone the website. It's Virginia. Well, you give it to us. How do they access your organization?
You can just go online at www.virginia21.org. We've got a plethora of information about the issues that we take on, and you can see several studies and blog posts that our members often write about these issues and how they're tackling them. There are, you know, you can sign up for our newsletter by just clicking on the newsletter link up at the top right. We've got all kinds of opportunities for young people to get involved, if any are listening, and we'd love to have you.
Earlier, we had a call from Timothy in Galax, and we have the answer that Barry was just accessing. Go ahead, Barry.
Yeah, get your pencils and paper ready. I'm going to give you this website for salaries of college graduates here in Virginia, as well as a couple of other websites that you may find useful. Timothy, again, had asked for, well, you know, what career should I choose? What are my earnings going to be? And again, Chev just released a report on that, and it's the website for that is research.schev.edu/reports. And then you'll find in there reports, post-completion wages of graduates under those reports. That's research.schev.edu/reports. Two other websites that you may find useful. Here in Virginia, We have the Virginia Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators, and they have a rather extensive website VASFAA.org. VASFAA.org, as well as a very wide-based organization of community financial aid admissions TRIO programs called Virginia CAN, Virginia College Access Network, and that's VirginiaCAN.org. One more plug. You know, we had this past week the College Application Week. There will be Super Saturday, which is put on by Virginia CAN and VASFA across the state on February the 9th, 2012, at various sites across the state, and you'll be able to access those sites at the VASFA website, where there will be financial aid professionals there to assist you in doing the FAFSA on site. I know in Blacksburg, it'll be at Blacksburg High School. But again, there are probably about 20 other locations across the state, and you can access those for February the 9th at 2012 to have assistance and actually have somebody sit down and walk through the FAFSA, the free application for federal student aid, the first piece that you need to do in applying for aid for 2013-14.
And if you don't mind me jumping in here, the data that's at CHEV is very good, the first website that Barry provided. But I do want to talk about a limitation of the data and offer some advice of how you can go around it. The data as it stands now, I mean, we've just now started collecting it. So there are issues about whether or not this data is good data and actually sort of accurately reflects, you know, what's happening out there. I mean, we can't capture out-of-state students yet because of privacy concerns. So there's a lot here that's not captured. But what you can do to look at that, instead of looking at data like this, you can also, you know, it's pretty easy to go online and check and just see that what the growth industries in Virginia are. I mean, look at the IT sector in Northern Virginia, you know, anything that's healthcare services related, you know, particularly in rural areas. I know in Southside Virginia in particular, you know, advanced manufacturing for anybody that's pursuing a two-year degree. Those are real growth industries. But the good news is that we are starting to collect this data now. There was a piece of legislation that went through that Virginia 21, you know, very much supported, that it's going to take the data as it's reported from the schools and compile it, and hopefully in 3 or 4 years we're going to have to take a really good look at what's happening and give students much better information going forward.
Okay, great. We have a call from Virginia Beach. Pete, go ahead with your question.
Hi, thank you for getting my call. My question was, my daughter is the first pretty much from our family going to college, so we are having a little bit of debate. We're thinking about for her to go to actually to a real college like a UVA or JMU, but then we had a second thought about her going to Virginia to a community college for the first 2 years, since she's going to be undecided for the first 2 years. So I didn't know if it's a good idea for, you know, is it going to affect her and her career, you know, by not going to a real college. And the other question was, where do we stand at this moment, since we are pretty much almost in the end of the year, and it's, you know, the college applications and everything is, you know, it's getting really, really close. What should be our next move? She hasn't applied anywhere yet, and what should be our next move for now?
Tom Kramer.
Sure. Well, I would say right now that any four-year college that she thinks that she may want to attend should apply right now. Should definitely get those applications out there. But the question I would ask is sort of, you know, how much money are you able to provide her to go to school? You know, what kind of aid do you think she's able to get? And that could determine whether or not she should start at the two-year or the four-year. You know, in Virginia, we've got a great program that we helped establish back in 2007 with the help of a state senator, you know, close to town here, Senator Walter Stosch. It's the two-year transfer grant legislation. It ensures that if you start college at the Virginia Community College system, you get good grades, you transfer to one of our four-year colleges in Virginia, you know, you'll get an extra financial aid bump if you qualify, if the income requirements work out. And when you go to the four-year college and you get that four-year degree, you get the four-year degree, and it'll say that you spent your time and your degree was granted by the College of William Mary, University of Virginia, James Madison University. It's not going to mention all that you went to the community college. But I will say, the community colleges in Virginia, their quality is second to none. They're a fascinating learning experience. In fact, I've seen at some of the community colleges, when you look at some of the first and second year classes, they actually use some of the same syllabuses. In fact, some of the same faculty members actually teach at four-year schools and two-year schools. So you know, I wouldn't question at all the value or the quality of the two-year system. You know, if your daughter is undecided, that's a great place to start, and I wouldn't worry at all about her outcome moving forward. In fact, one of the things I can say about the community college system, research that we've seen shows that folks that start at the community college level are actually more likely to become to get a job faster out of the four-year school, and they actually make more money. And there are a lot of reasons for that, but one of the principal ones that we think is that typically community college students work while they're in school, and that structured environment that's not often provided in the four-year program sort of matures students, and they get a lot more serious, they get a lot more focused, and when they get into the four-year program and they sort of decide their concentration, you know, they're gung-ho and they do it. So, you know, I definitely recommend the community college of students, and I wouldn't worry at all about the quality or outcome.
Yeah, let me just come in with Tom there, too. That community colleges are an excellent place to start, especially if the student is undecided on the curriculum they want to pursue. Both of my children went to community college and have either now graduated from four-year institutions or are in a four-year institutions, and there's a rather robust transfer program between the community colleges and the public colleges here in the state.
Yeah, there's a notion that somehow community colleges fall short. It's the perfect transition for so many people.
It is.
We have a call from Roanoke. Bill, go ahead with your question.
Thank you so much, and Tom and Barry, thanks for being there today. My son is at Virginia Tech, and he's completed 3.5 years. He's had a trust support his education during this particular period of time, and that trust has dried up. My question is there Pell Grant money available for someone getting ready to graduate with one semester left, or is there are there monies available within certain majors that he can get financial aid from? And I'll get off the air here and listen to your answer.
Thanks for the call, and congratulations on your son almost completing. That's what we like. In terms of the Pell Grant is used to be called the Basic Grant, so it is the first floor of the federal aid for higher education, for post-high school education. It does have some pretty stringent income requirements, and again, we're going to look, unless the student is age 24 or older, we're going to look at parental income and assets in addition to student financial situation. But it has nothing to do with whether the student is a senior, junior, or freshman. They don't have to start out as a freshman. A student can apply for financial aid at any point during their career, even if they've not received financial aid prior to that. And so I would encourage you to complete the free application for federal student aid and let's see what is available. In terms of particular majors, at Virginia Tech and most other institutions, there are central funds that the financial aid office administers, as well as funds out in the academic departments. So the answer to that is it sort of depends. It's something I would pursue in at least doing the free application for federal student aid and see what that gets you.
Thank you.
Is there anything else, Tom, that you want to add?
Oh, not at all.
About Pell Grants. We have a call from Samuel. You're from Chantilly, is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
What is your question?
My question is, I'm a student at Northern Virginia Community College, and throughout my tenure there, I have noticed that textbooks quickly cycle out for new editions that are basically the same in a lot of ways as the old edition with just cosmetic changes, and it makes it so you can't really turn in your textbook for as much as you would otherwise. And it's an intrinsic cost to college. And I was just wondering why, or if there's anything in the works to address this, as I feel like it's a kind of a major issue for any student. Go ahead.
Samuel's question highlights something, that there are many hidden or unforeseen costs that aren't accounted for. Yeah, Tom, what do you think of that?
You know, for textbooks in particular, Samuel, I tell you, in 2005, Virginia 21 sponsored a piece of legislation called the Textbook Market Fair Act, and we were trying to correct a lot of those problems, and correcting them, what we were trying to do is, you know, get more faculty members to release those book lists sooner so you could actually shop around online to do that. I mean, we have a survey running right now at Virginia 21, and Samuel, I urge you to go to our website and take the survey, but it looks like about 40% of students, because of the cost of books, are actually just foregoing purchasing some of their books because they just can't afford them. And that's obviously a problem. In fact, Virginia State, down at their business school, you know, they started a program where they would provide online resources, online textbooks for their students for a very small fee. And the passage rates and the completion rates and the grades of that program, you know, it went through the roof. So, you know, textbooks are a huge problem. One of the biggest problems is that the textbook publishers, it's a national market, so there's very limited things that we can do here in Virginia. But what you can do is you know, just make sure that you shop around to get the best price.
Great. Thank you so much. And good luck to you, Samuel.
Thank you.
One thing, Samuel, you might want to do is check and see if any of those new editions are on reserve in the library, so you may not have to purchase them.
Dana from Greenville, what's your question?
Hi. My question is about our son who's been homeschooled for 12 years, and he entered the community college system, and he's about to graduate in May, and right now we're applying for the four-year universities, and the application fees are just more than we can take on right now, and my question was about the free application week and whether there's you know, any allowance there for transfer students or, you know, homeschool students. He's also been accepted into the Phi Theta Kappa just lately, so his grades are awesome, and I just don't want to see him miss the opportunity to move on.
Good question, because there is a whole other population of homeschooled kids.
Right, and whether you're homeschooled or not, if you're having difficulties making the application fee, and I can't speak to this free week that we are just now ending because I think that's on a selective institution-by-institution basis. But by all means, if you're having severe financial difficulties and can't afford the admissions application fee, contact the institution or institutions in which you're interested and see if, in fact, they do have waivers available. Of course, there are also, if you went through an SAT waiver process, that should help you, too. You can make a note of that.
He did do that about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Does that still count?
Well, I would still mention that when you contact – that would be on a college-by-college, an institution-by-institution basis as to whether or not they would waive the fee, but definitely contact those institutions and ask.
Okay, and I have one more question. You mentioned something a while ago about a two-year transfer grant when you had been in community college, and, you know, there's more grants for you when you go from a two-year to a four-year.
Tom?
Absolutely. In fact
– how do we ask for those?
Well, that your son or daughter should actually go to the financial aid office at the community college and ask if they're eligible. It does have income requirements. I believe the requirement right now is that your expected family contribution, I believe, and Barry, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe it's $8,000. And if you do qualify, your son or daughter will receive $1,000 per year to help pay for school. And if they study in the science, technology, engineering, math, or nursing or healthcare field, they'll actually get an additional bump to provide them $1,500, you know, per year to help pay for school. But that's something that they can find out their eligibility in the financial aid office.
That's Tom is correct on all of that.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you so
Great.
Much for your call, Dana.
Thank you.
Tom, this is a good time to toss over to Barry. We talked about the myths of financial aid. What are some of the top ones, and can you help dispel some of those?
Yeah, there are several over here that we need to cover that really create an obstacle for many students. Number one, I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but I can't emphasize it enough. A lot of students wait to hear an admissions decision before applying for financial aid. Always apply for financial aid as soon as you can. And generally speaking, that's January 1 of each year when the free application for federal student aid becomes available. To complete the free application for federal financial aid, this is myth number two, you need to have your income information. And a lot of people wait to do their taxes the last minute, April the 15th or whenever, to do the FAFSA once they get their tax information done. Do not wait to fill out the FAFSA. You want to get that filled out as soon as you can because many institutions have deadlines prior to the tax filing deadline.
And for those who just tuned in, that's the free federal application.
Right. Free federal application for federal student aid. Now, if you and there is a provision to estimate your income once you do get your tax returns filed, you need to go in and update that. I think another one is, and Tom hit on this a little bit earlier, is that students and parents expect a great deal of financial aid in many instances. And you need to have that relative to the institution and the competitive nature of the student at that institution. And what I mean by that, a student that may get a full academic scholarship at one institution may just be average at another institution. So look and see the competitive nature of the SAT scores, the GPA ranges of students before you set your expectations on particular scholarships and amount of scholarships. The other one is, do not look at colleges initially by their sticker price, by, in other words, their tuition and fees price. What you want to do is look at colleges and universities, and again, this includes community colleges, by the program they offer and the particular institutional fit for the student, not by the cost. And later on, you can work on the cost. So there, those are some of the myths that are out there right now that we would like to dispel.
That is great. Some of those really make sense. And you can just see parents waiting until they've got all their financial information together, and then it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
So great tips. That is all the time we have for this edition of Virginia Conversations. I want to thank our guests, Tom Kramer, Executive Director of Virginia 21. And
thank you so much.
Thank you. And Barry Simmons, Director of Financial Aid at Virginia Tech.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Thanks to all of you for your questions and comments today. Next Friday at 9, it's Tim Kaine. He sits down to talk with us on the next Friday edition of Virginia Conversations. Until then, I'm Maylily Lee. So long.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.